why would you go back to riding and running easy? Like, I understand if you have a lot of hours, that's the way to do it. But if you only have 10, 11 hours a week, it's probably not the way to do it.
That Triathlon Show, episode 98. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by scientifictriathlon.com. I'm your host, Michael, and on today's episode, I interview Mike Ritchie. The main topics we talk about are quality over quantity in training for age group triathletes, how to balance training with a career and a family, and why taking many weeks off in the off-season and then doing long, slow-distance base building in most cases may be counterproductive for age groupers. A quick intro to Mike. He is the head coach of a D3 Multisport in Boulder, Colorado. His career highlights include things like being named the USA Triathlon Coach of the Year. He coached University of Colorado to 4 straight collegiate national championships. And he has coached many Ironman winners on the age group level and also ITU age group world champions and things like that, multiple Kona qualifiers and also many age group national champions. So to say that he knows a bit about what he's talking about when it comes to age group coaching is an understatement, to say the least. So we have a great interview on store for you with Mike, but first, let's thank our sponsors. We have Precision Hydration, and as I've mentioned the last couple of episodes, until the end of February, all of you listeners can get one free box of pH electrolyte product just by going to precisionhydration.com and using the code THATTRIATHLONSHOW, all one word, all caps, at checkout to get to try it out for free. And remember that hydration and nutrition, it should be worked on in training over a long time before your goal race. So now is the time to start, really, if you want to make sure that you have used all of that, what you're wanting to use in your spring or summer races. This episode is also sponsored by Triathlon Corner, a triathlon web shop that you can find on triathlon-corner.store. If you're in the market for anything from running shoes to wetsuits to power meters and bike computers from the best and biggest brands, they've got it. Plenty of great deals to go with it. And of course, they ship worldwide. So that's triathlon-corner.store. All right, so let's jump right into the interview with Mike Ritchie. Today's guest on That Triathlon Show is Mike Ritchie, who, as you heard in the bio, has a long, long list of accomplishments. And Mike, how are you today?
I'm good, Michael. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
I'm brilliant. Yeah. It's podcast evening, as we just talked about. I have a lot of interviews now going on.
It's fantastic.
It's one of those days that you realize that you love your job, isn't it?
Oh, those are the days you want to last forever.
Exactly. So with you, we discussed over email about what the topic could be. And actually we came to the conclusion that maybe something like how to train as age groupers and the need for quality in training and doing the right training and balancing the training and life and all those sorts of things would be the main topic. So let's just dive right into the first question that I have, and that's quality over quantity for age group triathletes. That was one of the things that you mentioned that would be interesting to discuss. So what's your take on that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think, you know, whenever I work with an athlete, a new athlete, or someone in our coaching group works with a new athlete, usually one of the first questions that comes up, you know, from the athlete is, how many hours should I train? I have this goal of X for Ironman or half Ironman or, you know, whatever it is. And I think, you know, I hate to always answer a question with a question, but my question is always, how many hours do you have? Because if you've got 12 hours to train, you can't train 20 hours, right? So, and if that's the case, then you don't need to be doing a bunch of, you know, easy training for 12 hours. You need to do some quality to put some sort of training effect on yourself. So when you get to race day, you have the best race you can. So I think it's always about working the schedule and the training around the age groupers' time limits. and, you know, and making sure it fits in with their life, because they, you know, when I was in my 20s and training for Ironman and early 30s, I didn't have a family and I could go do whatever I want all day Saturday and no one said anything because there was no one to say anything, right? Now, you know, that we've got kids sports on the weekends and I don't have, you know, 6 hours to go do whatever on a Saturday. So it's a lot different. And, you know, as you age as a coach and you work with younger athletes that are starting to have their own young families, you start to understand that, you know, not everybody has unlimited time. So you got to make the most of that time. I think that's where this idea of quality over quantity started. It actually started long before that. But I think it plays a big part in trying to coach age groupers with busy lives.
So before talking a bit more and going in depth on quality over quantity, what are some typical time ranges that you see that age groupers with families and careers usually that they tend to have available for training?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, it depends on what your goals are, obviously. You know, I've had guys that are, you know, close to 9 hours in an Ironman with families and they train, you know, 16, 17 hours a week. I've trained guys that have gone, you know, 10 and a half hours in an Ironman on 10 hours a week. So there's a big range, though. I mean, it's a big deal to get from 10 and a half hours to 9 hours, obviously. And obviously training 10 hours a week to 17 hours is a big gap, too. But most of the people fit in that 12 to 15 range. And for me, I typically think that if athletes can maintain 10 or 11 hours a week during the off season, you know, this being the off season from December to April, May, when it becomes time to bump it up to 12 or 14 hours, it's not that big of a jump. You know, and if you do an Ironman, yeah, maybe you do a couple of big weeks that are 16, 17, maybe even a 20-hour week here or there. Not mandatory, but it's a confidence booster. But, yeah, I think it's just a matter of, you know, what the goals are and really, you know, is this guy trying to go from 14 hours to 12 hours? Is he trying to go from 12 hours to 10 hours? Is he trying to go from 10 hours to 9 hours? I mean, it just depends. And it depends on the athlete's ability and how fast they adapt and how fast they can recover. So there's a lot that goes into it besides just, you know, how many hours. I think every age grouper thinks that they should train, you know, like a professional 30 hours a week. But the difference being they don't have the time to recover because they still have a job to take care of. They have other responsibilities, family, and all kinds of other things going on. So it's just a little different, you know?
Yeah. What about if you're not training for an Ironman, if you're training for a sprint or an Olympic?
Great question. Yeah. I mean, that's my sweet spot there. So I think that, you know, to be competitive, even at a national level in the U.S., I think you can get away with 8 to 10 hours a week for sprint or Olympic. An hour a day. You know, I've coached some sprint guys that get away with, you know, 7-8 hours a week and they're very competitive. And, you know, even guys that are top 20 at nationals, we've done it on 8.5-9 hours a week consistently. Doesn't mean there's not a 12-hour week, but there's also probably a 6-hour week or a 4-hour week in there at some point too. So, but it all balances out to that 8, 9, 10 hours, which is, you know, relatively, you know, an hour a day, hour and a half a day, nothing too terrible. And those athletes that are training for sprint and Olympic and are time limited, usually they have a day off too. So, you know, that Saturday that the half Ironman guy might be riding 4 hours, this guy's riding an hour and a half and running 20 minutes off the bike. So completely different. But I think on shorter racing, yeah, you can certainly train at a lower level. And obviously the quality is going to be a lot higher and you're going to get a lot more training effect on a week-to-week basis.
It also sounded, though, when you talked about those Ironman times that the edge groupers have available, that either it's a case of the people that have the most time available to train are the best, or the people that want to be the best, they just find the time to train somehow, to train a bit more per the requirements. And obviously there's a limit to that as well, but is that something that you see, that some people just manage to find
that is? Yeah, so you know, I live in Boulder and it's kind of funny because you go to a coffee shop at 10 o'clock any day of the week and it's packed with people and you wonder if anybody works, right? But you can go to the pool and master session is filled at 11 a.m. and it's filled at, you know, 7 a.m. and it's filled at 5 a.m. and people are on the roads all the time. So maybe people make training a part of their lifestyle, and maybe they make their job around the training sometimes. So maybe they do some work in the morning, they get a mid-afternoon ride in for a couple hours, and maybe they work more in the afternoon. But I think you're right. I think that those people, they can create the time around their jobs and maybe they're a little more flexible. And certainly maybe they don't have high-stress jobs because they've made, you know, a good amount of money in their lives and they can kind of get to the point where, well, I only need to work 30 hours a week and they can take that extra 10 hours and train. Or take that 10 hours of time and trade it up between training and recovering, right? Because that's a huge part of this component too, especially when you get in that 20-hour week range. You need that recovery time as well. So I think it's a good point. I think it's people do make the hours to make it happen.
Yeah,
and so sometimes they sacrifice other stuff too.
kind of a sidetrack, but if somebody wants to go to their boss and maybe go to PubMed and grab a couple of studies about how endurance sports is beneficial for reducing sick days and et cetera, and maybe that will allow you to train in the afternoon and then work more in the evening instead.
Yeah. Well, I would bet that that's true. I would bet that they should pay less for health insurance and all that stuff because they're probably not sick. I mean, if you get hit by a car, that's a major problem. But I mean, otherwise, you're probably more productive at work, more efficient. You get in there, get your work done, and get out to train, right? So you don't want to mess around too much.
Yeah, yeah, it is actually true. I know it for a fact. I've seen the studies. Okay, yeah, so let's go back to the quality over quantity, and maybe. Can you give us a couple of scenarios that you worked with athletes and how this plays out in real life?
Yeah, sure. So, let's say I have an athlete that's like me and they meet the traditional periodized program and they kind of go 3 weeks up and a week down and they're kind of doing some, base training, quote unquote, base training this time of year, maybe December through February before they start doing intervals in March and, all that stuff. What I would say to them is, if you came off your season in November, and let's say you did a Olympic or a half Ironman at the end of the year, you have good fitness, why would you go back to riding and running easy? Like, I understand if you have a lot of hours, that's the way to do it. But if you only have 10, 11 hours a week, it's probably not the way to do it. I would rather see them get in there, get in the pool and, work on technique and do some speed and then do some endurance stuff and work on some speed. And then the next day get in, work on some, more technique stuff and maybe work on some more endurance, like different types of things like that. Then, you don't get on your trainer and just spin for an hour. You do some VO2 work. And maybe it's only 6 or 8 minutes of VO2 work, but it's huge. I mean, the training effect just makes a huge difference. That's how you're going to raise the threshold, right? And then you go do an FTP test and the FTP goes up. And then on the run, and I'm not saying that you have to go to the track every week, but, get on the treadmill or get outside and run 8 times a minute fast, at your 5K pace. Like, just keep touching those different energy systems and keep touching those speeds so you never lose contact with it. So when it comes time to race and you're like, wow, I haven't raced in 6 months and I haven't really done a ton of speed work, except those easy sessions I do once a week where it's 8 times a minute or something like that. But then they go out there and they hit the times and they go, wow, it's because they never really lost their fitness and they never lost the speed, right? And now we get into the season or close to season, we can add in some of the harder stuff where it's 800s and sets of 400s on the track, or, I'm talking about running right now, but, things like that where you can keep, building the fitness throughout the season. It doesn't have to be, the old way. I mean, there's different ways. And we've evolved. I mean, we've evolved as, society, hopefully, and hopefully our physiology and learning and teaching others how to do it has evolved too.
Yeah, and obviously periodization principles were developed with elite athletes that did nothing but train in mind. So we need to adapt that to the age groupers. So when you say that when you're coming off your off season and you have that contact with the speed work, do you have a full on speed work session in a week, or is it usually more gradual that you have those 8 times 1 minute? So that can be seen as a very light speed session, or how does that work?
Right, great question. So, in a traditional running program, if you go back and look at Lydiard or Jack Daniels or anybody like that, typically you're doing speed 2 or 3 times a week. And that speed work may only be 6 times 30 seconds at the end of a long run, or, 5 times 40 seconds in the middle of an hour run, something like that. But all you're trying to do is just touch that speed so your body, neuromuscularly, your body understands, like, oh, this is what it's like to run fast. Let me remember this, right? It's the same thing. It's just the same concept. And so that would be an easy session, right? So 6 times 30 seconds would be an easy session, 4 times 40 seconds would be easy session. And then you would maybe get on the treadmill and do something where, okay, let's do 5K pace for a whole minute, or let's do it for 90 seconds or whatever, but let's hold it. And let's do 8 of them repetitively on a short rest. We're going to do them on the same amount of rest. So it's not super hard, but you're just touching it, right? So those would be kind of like, that's how I would begin the off season, something like that. On the bike, I would do more intensity just because it's easier to recover, right? So maybe Monday is a VO2 session where you're doing 6 times 30 or 10 times 30 seconds on off, where it's 30 seconds of VO2, 30 seconds recovery. And then maybe Wednesday would be something like threshold, but maybe it's only 4 times 3 minutes at FTP, right? So you're just training at threshold, 3 minutes on, 3 minutes off. And then toward the end of the week, they do some sort of they can get outside or do Zwift or something. Maybe they do a 90-minute, 2-hour ride, but maybe there's some tempo in there. Maybe there's a hill on Zwift. They climb a couple times and they do, 10, 12, 15 minutes of climbing at, zone 3. So throughout the week, they've touched all the energy systems, right? They've touched VO2, they've touched threshold, they've touched tempo. not in huge amounts, but as they get closer to the race and they do race-specific training, you know, if they're going to do a hilly Ironman or a hilly Olympic, then yeah, maybe it's going to be more tempo or more strength work because it's a hilly course. I mean, obviously, you want to tailor the training to what the race is, right? And obviously, what the athlete's weakness is too. So there's a lot of things that go into it. But between the bike and the run, those two things being the majority of the race, you know, 80 to 90% of any race, those are the things you need to focus on. And once you have that speed work built, it only takes, you know, 4 to 6 weeks to give anybody endurance. It doesn't take a long time because they've obviously been training for a while. They have endurance, but maybe they need more endurance. So maybe now you go do your 2-3 hour rides. But, you know, before maybe you were riding them at 16, 17 or 30 kilometers an hour. And now you're riding them at, you know, 20 miles an hour. Just because your fitness is better, right? You've been working on FTP, you're working on VO2, and you know that just raises the whole bar and makes everything easier and you're more efficient and faster.
Yeah,
that's kind of how I view it.
Yeah, very interesting points there, and I think that probably that answers a lot of questions that you probably see as well from people that are wondering why they seem to be stuck at a single speed and not improving, and a lot of that may come down to actually fluctuations and letting go too much in parts of the season.
If I could give you one example, like, and this has happened at least 20 times to me, someone comes to me and I swear they run a 30-minute 5K, an hour 10K, and a 2-hour half Ironman. That's 2-hour half marathon run. That's all the same pace, right?
Yeah.
And they go out there and I say, look, just go run 6 times 30 seconds twice a week. They do that Tuesday, they do that Thursday, they still do their long run, but all of a sudden their long run is now like 20 seconds a mile faster. And then their easier runs are 20 seconds. And then all of a sudden they go from a 30-minute 5K to a 27. And they go, how did I do that? I'm not doing anything different. And I'm like, oh, you are. Because the neuromuscular patterns have changed so much that you're running these quick runs at 8:30 pace for 30 seconds. And your body's saying, oh, I get this. I understand this. And then it starts becoming the norm, right? I mean, that's how we change things. And that 10-minute pace is no longer what their baseline is anymore. Now it's becomes, you know, 9 minutes or something. They run faster. So I think that's, you know, it's really simple, easy stuff sometimes that we just kind of overlook. And I know I read a lot on the internet sometimes, but the one takeaway I always get from most articles is that we always worry about the last 5% of something, but it's really the first 95% we got to focus on, right? Like that last 5% is those sexy track workouts where you did 8 times a mile, or you did 2400s. Like that's all great, but if you didn't do the other 95% of the stuff to get there, that track workout wasn't going to go that way. And if you don't do that track workout, chances are you're still going to run probably pretty close to your goal. You know, maybe you're not going to hit it exactly in that those 400s tune you up, so to speak, but it's the 95% that matters really, right?
Yeah, perfect. And so what about when you move closer to your races then, how does that change? Do you have you already touched on that you have the bigger, more amounts of that speed work, but does that change some other sessions in the week, or how does the overall structure of a week change?
Definitely. So if I, you know, if we got into a point where, you know, maybe we can drop VO2 on the bike, for example, you know, maybe we do just some sort of easy riding earlier in the week, because you know, I like to keep the frequency up. I think it's important to ride 4 times a week, run 4 times a week, if not more, if you have the time. I think that's the key. A lot of people want to ride and run 3 times a week. And I think that's fine. But, you know, if you want to make progress, it has to be 4 to 5 times a week. And maybe we should talk a little bit about block training. But in terms of, you know, a week, like I would take out that first hard ride, maybe the threshold, you know, maybe that threshold workout, instead of, you know, being 12 to 20 minutes, now becomes 20 to 50 minutes. So it's a much longer session. It's really getting ready for that Olympic distance race. And then on the weekend, if you're going to go do like an Olympic simulation, you know, I'd have an athlete do, you know, 2 times 20 minutes at their Olympic distance effort, right? Pace, heart rate, RPE, watts, whatever they want to do, and then get off the bike and try to run, you know, 3 or 4 miles at Olympic distance pace. Like make it a real simulation. Because if you can do that, you know, loaded with fatigue, once you taper, you should be able to do, you know, the entire race at that effort or pretty close. So you know, that's a big thing. So if you can drop one of those harder sessions, make that middle threshold session a little longer, and then add another one on the weekend if you're recovered for it, you know, then you're going to see big gains doing, you know, a good amount of threshold training each week.
So how do you recover? The sessions in between are easier. Is there anything else?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so I mean, it's the whole like, you know, run like so slow that it's embarrassing. You don't have anybody to see you. Or, you know, get in the pool and just kind of float up and down the pool a few times. You know, if you're a guy who's a girl that swims 120, 130, 100, maybe you just kind of, you know, floating along at 2 minutes, 100 or 145, like just working technique and just get some recovery. You know, if you've got, you know, the option to use recovery boots and stuff like that and stay on top of sleep and nutrition. And those things are, you know, so overlooked, but they're so important. And I think that, you know, swimming and cycling are obviously the two easiest things to do for recovery. And I give them to my athletes, you know, every week, even in the off season, they're doing that kind of stuff to recover, just to kind of keep the blood flow going and you know, help the damaged tissue and, you know, help repair and just get them to the point that when they get to that next key session, they're ready to go. So that's a big part of it.
Perfect. And I'll take you up on that. Let's talk a bit about block training. You mentioned that. That's interesting. So what do you have?
Yep. So I've been doing this a long time. I had a coach named Rick Niles way back in the early 90s. And we talked quite a bit about this. We did sport-specific training a lot. And what I learned from that was that when you're weak in one area, if you don't focus on it, like as a triathlete, I feel like unless you get injured, you never work on your weak sport, right? So if you're a swimmer and you hurt your shoulder, then maybe you get extra time and maybe you're riding the bike more, maybe you're running more. If you're a runner and you're not a swimmer and you hurt your shin or your ankle or something, maybe you're not running as much and then you have to get in the pool 5 days a week and your swimming gets better. So you know, why do we have to wait for an injury for this to happen, right? So I think the big thing is to take your weakest sport at some, you know, you start in December, November 1st, December 1st, whatever you want to do, January 1st is fine, and take 8 weeks and just focus on that sport. So you're doing it 5 or 6 days a week, and let's take swimming, for example, and let's say you're doing your two normal big workouts, one's, you know, 3,000, one's 4,000, 3,500, whatever. And then the other three sessions can be, you know, 1,000 yards, you can swim 1,500, you know, 1,000 meters, 1,500 meters, and whatever, another 1,000 or 2,000 meters. But within those, like one's a recovery, one might be a speed session with just a bunch of 25s, another one might be just 50s. But if you can do that for 8 weeks, right, and then obviously you're still going to run, you know, twice a week, two or three times a week, you can bike, you know, two or three times a week. And that's where I would say, you know, for the bike, insert 1 day of VO2 and 1 day of tempo, and maybe, you know, that's kind of your bike for the week. And then the running could be the same thing. 1 day with some, you know, 30-second pickups, and maybe the other day's long. And maybe you throw a little tempo in the end. So you're still hitting all the energy systems just in a different way. But after those 8 weeks are up, like I typically have someone do a 1,000, you know, meter time trial in the beginning and have one do it at the end of the 8 weeks. And even with all that load and all that fatigue, typically they swim much, much faster. And it's really the frequency and learning the feel for the water. And the reason I bring up swimming is because it's for many triathletes, it's such the hard thing to do. And they don't get better at it because they just don't immerse themselves in it. And then after those eight weeks are over, then you go to your next weakest sport, like say if it's cycling. So now we're going to bike 5 days a week and maybe we're going to, you know, we're going to do the VO2, we're going to do the threshold, we're going to be the tempo. But really the whole idea is just get your butt in the seat and just ride. And after 8 weeks, you should feel a lot better. And obviously test in the beginning, test in the end, hopefully the FTP has gone up and usually it does. And then if you have time, you can do a run block. Typically don't have to worry about doing the strength, event. So if you're, you know, if in triathlon the run's your strength, maybe you don't need to do a run block. You can, certainly can. And if you think about this whole thing, it takes 6 months. So if you start on November 1st, you're not done till April 30th. But if you're not racing till June 1st, you got plenty of time to be in shape, even though you just had 6 months of incredible training. So that's the other thing with triathletes. Like they do something like this and they go, oh, my run's going to, you know, go to pot. Well, no, it's not, because your fitness is going up in all three sports across these months, right? So I've used this concept for a long, long time, and it's really been awesome, and it's helped so many people just get over the hump of having to say, oh, I hate the run because I stink at it, or I'm not a good cyclist. Or we can change that. You can certainly change that if you want to put the work in.
Yeah, exactly. As always, it requires doing the work, but as long as you do it, then there are ways to do that, and I recently moved to Lisbon myself. Don't think I've told you that, but I'm now part of a triathlon club here and I swim 5 times per week. So my swim volume has doubled easily, if not more. And, and even as a fairly advanced triathlete, this is my fastest rate of improvement in swimming ever. because of the amount that I'm swimming. And you wouldn't expect that. You would expect the improvements to become slower and slower as you go along. Yeah, swimming is my weakest sport, but
not anymore.
But Hopefully not soon. We'll see. But yeah, definitely just those block. And I consider this a block training because I have some running issues as well. So running injuries that have kept me from running. So even if it's not, I'm one of those that, but I would be doing the same amount of swimming anyway. So this definitely doing the frequency, the volume, and obviously having the right structure to it, that definitely can bring about big improvements. So let's move on to beginners that may be fairly new to the sport, and all of this may be seem somewhat overwhelming, I guess. But
sure.
So what would you tell them to focus on, and how do they remove the overwhelm about all of this, and maybe removing the talk about training 10 to 12 times per week or 10 to 12 hours per week?
I think, you know, first of all, with beginners, one thing I would say is, you know, be consistent with your training, right? So if, you know, if you want to improve, I mean, if you're starting from zero, three times a week in each sport is fantastic, right? So nine workouts a week is fine, with a couple of strength workouts or mobility workouts, that would be great too. But for the most part, they just need to do it, right? They just need to go out there and get in the water and swim and get on their bikes and ride and run. And secondly, you know, so consistency is number one. Number two is just have a schedule that you know you can complete each week and check the box. And you want to make it in the beginning so it's easy to complete. And if it's a struggle, then you're going to get demoralized and you're going to say, oh, I can't do this, and it's not going to work. So it's got to be easy enough that, you know, if I were starting with a beginner, I would say, look, someone who's never swam, never biked, never ran, I'd say, look, go swim 200 meters. I don't care. Go swim 200 meters. And the next time, try to swim 300. And the next time, maybe try to swim 500. If you can do that in the first week, that's awesome. And on the bike, maybe they ride, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever. And on the run, you know, they can go run. If they can run 5 or 10 minutes each day, then that's a good start. But I mean, I'm talking about pure beginner. And then, you know, if it's someone as they're getting along, then, you know, maybe enough for them would be, you know, 3 45-minute rides, 3 30-minute runs, and, you know, 3 or 4 5 to 800-meter swims. It doesn't have to be a lot. They just need a consistency. But as you know, like joining a swim squad, it's a huge, huge thing, you know, helps your swimming a ton as long as you're not intimidated, right? Because I mean, if you get in there and you're swimming 2.5 minutes, 100, then, you know, and everybody else is, you know, under 2 minutes, then you feel like, you know, you're the slow guy, and you are the slow guy, but you got to kind of keep at it. And maybe group training isn't the thing for you at that time. Maybe you still need to work on it your own, but I still feel like it's important to get in that group because I think that's the easiest way to get faster, because you can learn a lot. You can see how faster people swim and kind of copy how they do it and simulate how they swim. So it's kind of a catch-22 with the swimming for sure. But joining a run group is a great thing, right? Kind of get going. But I think whatever you can do to, one, be consistent, and two, have a schedule that you can complete on a week-to-week basis, you're going to see huge gains over time, huge. And you don't feel bad, you know, moving the 30-minute runs to 45, and then eventually you have an hour run, and then all of a sudden you're in an hour and a half, and, you know, same thing on the bike, you start out with 30 minutes and 45, and then an hour, and then you're at an hour and a half, 2 hours easily, and, you know, the endurance comes quick, it really does. As humans, we adapt pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's you're setting yourself up to win simply, and then it becomes a self-fulfulling prophecy, really, that it just keeps
yourself up for success, right? I mean, that's it. That's what it's about.
So what about if you're moving up to do, say, your first 70.3 or your Ironman, what are the things that typically change when you do that and start preparing for your first long course race?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, in terms of swimming, right, so, you know, when you go from Olympic to a half Ironman, the swim doesn't change too much, right? So you're going from a 1,500 meter to 1,800 meters, so not a lot of change. So your swim workouts don't have to change that much. If I'm coaching somebody for Olympic distance, their long run is typically going to be 80 to 90 minutes. And that's what I like for a long run. I like 1.5 times the distance or 1.5 times the time it takes them to race. So, I think moving up to a half Ironman, run, yeah, maybe they're going to do 2 hours, maybe they'll do 2:15. That's another 45 minutes maybe. And that can gradually happen over 3 to 4 weeks. I don't think the run really takes too long to grow safely. You know, 10, 12, 15 minutes a week, whatever it is. But the big difference moving up to half Ironman is obviously the bike, because the bike is twice as long. It's still 50% of the race, and you're going from, you know, 40K to 90K, which is more than double. And really, it's just putting the time in on the bike. I mean, if you're good on the VO2 stuff and you're good on the threshold, you know, you're getting your 90 minutes, you're getting your 2 hour rides in. You know, for half, you're going to want to do, you know, 3, 3.5, 4 hours sometimes. So to build that nice big endurance base. So it's important, I think, is really the focus is going to be, you know, mostly on the bike and the run, but really mostly on the bike. That's where all the time goes. And I would even say if you move from half Ironman to Ironman, it's still the bike, because the bike is, you know, now going to double up to, you know, 6-7 hour ride if you do the whole, you know, 180 kilometers. So depending how fast you are. So the bike is really the big piece of that, and it's carving out the time to do it. And I think one mistake people make is that they feel like they have to do a long ride and a long run every single weekend. And I don't think that's necessary. I think you can get away with a good quality bike ride one week and then a good quality run the next week. And I'm not saying you don't bike on the weekends you ride, but you don't have to ride 6-7 hours. You could do a good 3-4 hour ride on a Saturday, you know, and then Sunday get up and do your long run on, you know, heavy legs, because obviously you've been riding and you rode a little harder the day before. But I don't think time-wise you need to, you know, banging out those 100-mile rides, or, you know, people tend to think that that's – I think it's overkill. I don't think you need to keep doing that. I would rather have someone who's fresh mentally and physically, still putting in some time, just not as much time, and get to race day fresh and not feeling like, wow, I did 20 100-mile rides. That, you know, that's a lot. It's a lot on your body. And mentally it can be really draining sometimes.
Yeah, I think that probably comes as a relief to listeners who may have thought that an Ironman always automatically comes with a weekend, yeah, at least 4-hour ride moving up,
right,
to six, 7 hours.
Right.
That's okay. So another transition that I want to talk about is athletes that are maybe mid-packers and they want to really step up their game and go to be competitive in their age group. What would be your top tips for these athletes, and what have you seen in athletes that have taken those steps in? What are some common attributes of them?
The one thing that I see when people move up from, like you're saying, back a pack to being competitive, and I'll give you some of my athletes for example. Most of the time it's consistency, and sometimes it's just a matter of goals and objectives. Okay, so, you know, we can all have goals. We can say we want to break 10 hours in an Ironman, or 9 hours, or we want to run a 3-hour, 3.5-hour marathon off the bike, whatever it is. Like, that's a great goal. But what's the objective? Like, what is it going to take me to get there? And there's a lot of things that need to happen, right? So if I run 20 miles a week, am I going to break 3.5 hours in an Ironman marathon? Probably not. Like, I know it needs to be 30 to 40 miles a week. I know I need to run 4 to 5 days a week. So those are my objectives, right? I know that in order to hit those times that I need to be running my easy paces at X, if it's 7, you know, 50 a mile, or it's 8 minutes a mile, whatever it is, you know, based on, you know, prior results from some of my racing and some of my training, or what I know other people my size have done, right? Then that's one way to look at it. Same thing on the bike. So if we look at watts per kilo and we say, okay, right, you know, right now I bike 3 hours on the nose for a half Ironman, and I want to ride 245, but right now my watts per kilo is 2.8. But I know that the guys that ride 230, 245 are probably 3.2, 3.3 watts per kilo. So I need to get there. So now you've got a goal, and with the objective of, let's ride 4 or 5 times a week, let's do some block training, whatever it is, let's do a good amount of threshold training. Like, let's give it a good attempt to try to get to that number, right? Because if you don't get to that number, that 245 is a dream. I mean, you got to be able to hit the watts per kilo. I mean, I think that the way power has changed things, that it's pretty simple to say either you're going to ride the time or you're not. If aerodynamics are all, everything being equal, if you can ride the time, if you can hit the watts per kilo, you're going to ride the time. I mean, I think that it's pretty simple. I mean, you know, considering that you're going to get nutrition right and all that, I know that's a big if, but I think it makes your chances for success go from, you know, 50% to 85% to 90%, right? So I think that's the one thing, is consistency and having a plan and having objectives and really understanding that I'm not just going out there to run for an hour. I'm going out there to run for an hour at a certain pace. I'm going to do, you know, 6 strides in there at, you know, 7 minute pace, 6:30, whatever it is for my 30 seconds. And then I'm going to do that twice this week. And then I'm going to do my long run at X pace. And at the end, I'm going to run half marathon pace. Like, have objectives during the week. And it's not, you know, my athletes that have made that jump, it's really just because they've gotten more serious about it. They've got more specific. They have goals. They try to reach them. You know, it's like anything in life. Like, you just got to set yourself up for success, but you got to be able to do the steps. And, you know, sometimes the steps are really boring, but I think to be successful, sometimes it takes just a lot of repetitive things that are boring, but that's what it takes to be successful in a lot of areas.
Yeah, that brings up the old saying. I'm probably butchering it a little bit, but it goes something like a dream is just like a goal, but without a plan, or something like
that. A goal is nothing but a dream without a plan. You got it. You just had one word backwards.
Okay. Yeah. hope one of us got it right at least.
Yeah.
I think the listeners will understand what we mean.
That's right.
Yeah. One final question before we move into the rapid fire questions is, what would be your best tip or tips for balancing training with your family, career, time management wise?
So I got this secret that I'm going to tell you, but you got to tell your listeners not to tell anybody.
Yeah.
So here it is. Here's the secret. Train when your family doesn't even know you're training, right? So if they're sleeping at 4 a.m., get up and do the training. And I tell you, 90% of my athletes do this. They're on the bike at 4 a.m., 5 a.m. They're off the bike at 6:37. They've got an hour and a half of, you know, they got an hour run in, hour ride in, and a half hour run, or they've been to the pool and they lifted and they've come back home. They're helping with the kids to get into school or whatever they have to do to help out. And they get home at dinner time and it's all family time. It's not like, oh, I got to go squeeze a workout in, or I'm going to be home late because I got to go to the gym. Like, get it done early when nobody even knows you're awake, and it makes your life so much better. That's one thing. The other thing I think is involving your family in the process. So a lot of my athletes will, you know, do a point to point long ride in the summertime, and they'll tell their family to join them. So they'll say, hey, I'm going to ride 80 miles to this park, and the family meets them there, and the kids give them their shoes. They do their run for 20 minutes. Sometimes the kids will ride their bikes with them, but you involve the family and they feel a part of it, and everybody's invested in dad's success or mom's success. I think that's just a great way to do it, and just keep everybody involved. And the kids get more excited when they race because they see you do the hard work. You know, it's one thing for your kids to show up and see you race and be like, oh, there's my dad, he's running by. But then they see you like actually go through the motions in the wintertime and then the summertime. And, everybody's kind of invested that way.
Yeah, those are absolutely great tips. And it's funny how it seems that training in the morning when everybody's asleep, that seems to, from the outside, to be such a natural way of how people train in the US and in the UK as well, which are the two cultures that I guess are easiest to follow just because of where media comes from in triathlon. But I know that in my home country, Finland, that actually it's very uncommon for people to train in the morning, relatively speaking, I would say. And it's hard to get athletes to transition to morning training. But then when things fall off the track in the evening, when things come up, that really would be the simplest solution. But it's difficult. It seems to be some sort of cultural apprehension against morning training. I don't know.
Is it because it's more daylight at night in Finland, or what is the reason?
No, there's always just darkness. Sun. So
always dark, right?
which is why I fled the country. So let's go into the rapid fire questions. And the first one is, what's your favorite book, blog, or resource related to triathlon?
Oh, related to triathlon. Okay. It's a book called Good to Great. It's a business book. But I do love it. I think it has a lot to do with everything in terms of life and getting things organized. But in terms of triathlon and sport in general, I like a book called The Power of Habit. And it really has changed my mindset, not only for myself, but how to coach my athletes and get them to be more focused on habits and getting in that. Because training is a habit, right? Just getting into a habit of learning how to do things. And like we just talked about, early morning training, right?
Yeah, I read that one too. I can definitely vouch for that. It's a really great one. What's your favorite piece of gear or equipment?
Oh, that's a great question. Oh, man, I don't really know. I just got a Garmin watch. I'm going to say that's it. I've got a Fenix 5. It's fantastic. It has sleep on here. It tells me the weather. Tells me my training load. So I'm going to go with the Fenix 5 for now. It could change next week, though. You know, triathletes, they love different gear. So it's always changing.
And finally, what's a personal habit that's helped you achieve success?
Yeah, I think it's the early morning thing. It's getting up early and just getting the workouts done and making sure something gets done every day and not fall into that medium of missing a workout and the next day, it's okay, I missed yesterday, I'll miss today too. I think it's just a habit of getting up early, getting something done, and then feeling like I've accomplished something that day, even if it's only a 30-minute run. That's huge. I think it just keeps the momentum flowing each week. So that's kind of what's really helped me a bit.
You know what? What I should do is I should go through all of the podcast interviews I've done and find all of the guests that have said something along those lines of what you just said and add all of those clips together into one big podcast.
Right on. Yeah, that's awesome.
And that would hopefully be motivation enough for people that aren't yet doing it to get started with it.
That's a good idea.
All right. Thank you, Mike. This has been really, really awesome. And yeah, I think that the listeners will find this super valuable. Your company is D3 Multisport, and
yes,
that's on d3multisport.com.
Right, right.
And you're on Twitter and Instagram at d3_multisport, I think.
Yes, sir. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Is there anything else that you wanted to mention before we close off this interview?
No, just being stay consistent with your training, stay healthy, and you know, if you need help, reach out to people. There are a lot of resources out there for people to help. And triathlon's a great community sport, and I think any coach or you know, experienced athletes, even newcomers, love to help, you know, people coming into the sport and get an understanding what a great sport. It's a lifestyle sport. I mean, you can do it the rest of your life, which is awesome. So enjoy.
Perfect. Thank you, Mike. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
All right. Thank you too.
I think that this interview probably gave a lot of you, and me as well, a great new perspective on training. As I always get these new perspectives when doing interviews, to be honest, but this one was definitely something a little bit extra in terms of getting new thoughts and insights and ideas. So I really, really enjoyed it. And I also had a great post-interview chat with Mike, where actually for once I didn't take the role of a fellow coach, but actually we talked a little bit from my athletic perspective, which was really, really great. So I really appreciate that. Thanks for that, Mike. The take-home message today, in my opinion, for all of you is what Mike talked about on not needing to take a long break after your last race and then returning to training with just long, slow distance training. If you want, you're probably not going to be very close to any sort of overtraining. So it's one thing for an elite triathlete that trains 30 hours per week to take a whole month off no swim, bike and run, which some do, and they do some cross training for sure, but no swimming, biking and running for 1 month is completely normal. But for age groupers that do a very limited amount of training, that is going to show in lost fitness. So digging a bit deeper into that, the point about always staying in touch with intensity and with your speed, I think, is another very important one within that realm of not taking those too long breaks and then, well, especially not doing just that long, slow distance training, because if you don't have enough hours, then you're probably not going to get the best return on investment from just that type of training. And I have a few examples of how I like to do this, staying in touch with intensity, I should say, because this is definitely a principle that I use in my coaching as well. And so when you get back into training, then what I'll do is I'll give on the run side of things, it will be strides. Or just those strides are just like, and hill sprints also, strides are just like 30 second accelerations, 20 to 30 seconds, up to a very fast speed, 95% of max, but always staying relaxed. Being relaxed is the key. And hill sprints, those are 8 to 12 seconds maximum power, really focusing on power and neuromuscular activation there, but super short. Both strides and hill sprints have a full recovery, walking recovery, and you might do 4 strides or 6 strides and maybe 4 to 8 to even 10 hill sprints, depending on what type of athlete you are and how used you are to that type of training. But that's basically how you very easily, with a very limited amount of stress, stay in touch with intensity and speed on the run. And on the bike, I also like doing a similar form of power sprints, like 10 to 20 seconds from a standstill in a hard gear. Also on the bike, I might be a bit more aggressive with from the start, including some light VO2 max workouts, like, for example, that depends on the athletes, of course, and there's no one-size-fits-all here. But some athletes may get like 2 sets of 10 times 30-second repeats, followed by 30 seconds easy spinning between intervals. And then between those 2 sets, there might be 5 to 10 minutes of easy spinning again. So it's a very light workout for a VO2 max workout with just 10 minutes in total, and yeah, pretty easy. But it keeps you in touch with that intensity, and definitely it helps maintain the fitness that you have, if not improve it at least. And in swimming, speed work is present basically throughout the year. A favorite of mine is 10 times 50, where you break up the 50s into, you sprint the first 25 all out, and then the swimming back, the second 25, that's just very, very easy recovery. You can even do backstroke or breaststroke going back. And then relatively long rests between intervals. There might be 30 seconds or even more. It depends a bit. But those are, of course, just examples. And as I said, there's no one-size-fits-all solutions. And I think that I'm probably on the run, especially a bit more conservative than Mike is based on our discussion now. But I definitely think that that many athletes could handle quite a bit more intensity throughout the year than just those strides and hill sprints. So I might experiment with that myself as well and include some of those fartlek times workouts. Basically would do really well, I think, even from the very point when you get back into training. So yeah, those are just my two cents and some takeaways. Also, one thing that I could relate to is, or relate this episode to, is the one with Malcolm Brown and what he said about intensity two episodes ago in episode 96. Malcolm Brown, if you missed that episode, is the coach, former coach of the Brownlee brothers. Now he's retired, but he said that doing above race intensity workouts, and he talked about running specifically weekly, pretty much, is important. That's what he said. So definitely some food for thought there. As always, you can find the show notes for this episode on thattriathlonshow.com. And by the way, one thing that I want to mention is that that URL is a redirection link. So it will take you to scientifictriathlon.com/podcast. But of course, on scientifictriathlon.com, in addition to the podcast, there's a lot of other stuff there. I have a free resource center with a video series on effective structured training, and a triathlon-specific core training program, a nutrition quick start guide, which is kind of based on the recent podcast episodes that I did from the research that I've reviewed, basically, the American College of Sports Medicine and some other entities reviewed the research, and I just reported on it. But it's all an evidence-based nutrition quick start guide. Plus, of course, there's information on training plans and coaching and everything that I do in triathlon is on there. So go and check out that website if you haven't already. In Monday's episode, I have an interview with Monique Ryan. She's one of the foremost sports nutritionists in the US. She has worked with USAT and USA Cycling, among others. Plus, she's the author of one of the greatest books or resources on nutrition, sports nutrition, which is Sports Nutrition for Endurance Athletes, which is produced by Velo Press. So there will be a variety of nutrition topics covered in that one. And that's about it for this episode. Thank you to Triathlon Corner for sponsoring this episode. Triathlon Corner is the online home of shopping the best triathlon products in the world to great prices. They ship worldwide, they guarantee great customer service. They have brands like Garmin, Stages, Café du Cycliste, Zip, Mako, Zonefree, Hoka One One, to name just a few. And you can find them on triathlon-corner.store. And thank you also to Precision Hydration. As I said, you need to train your nutrition and hydration now, so to make sure that you have your nutrition hydration plan worked in as you enter the races this season. So go and check them out, take their free online sweat test, and then get that free box of Precision Hydration product by using the discount code or free product code thattriathlonshow, all one word, at checkout on precisionhydration.com. Thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart and keep loving triathlon.